Okay, so I'm here with Joe Wodzak.
Yes, me.
Correct. Yep. Wonderful. So, Joe, what brings you to Macclesfield today?
Well, I was invited by Addingtons, who have these luxury retirement estates with apartments, to come up and give a talk. Now, I love this part of the world. I went to university in Manchester. Started off in Salford, actually, and moved across.
Oh, fantastic!
Once they demolished it, or what the bit I was in. I don't come up here often enough. And there's a real kind of history for wine drinkers and stuff in Manchester. You know, with it being not like, yes, far away from the port and everything else. And you know, I've worked in Obbinses in Manchester, and I've, you know, eaten and drunk in all the places, and done my fair share of curry eating, which is obviously a part of the rite of passage of being a student up there. But also, it's a nice opportunity to come to this part of town. It's very, very beautiful, this part of the world.
Definitely.
To talk to people who are here ostensibly because they're looking for an attractive apartment to maybe retire into, but also people that are coming under their own volition to come and hear me talk about wine. It's always nice to talk to an audience that's listening, you know.
Definitely. And about something you're passionate about.
Exactly. And the thing about today was that I was asked to talk about whatever I wanted. So they gave me a list of wines to choose from, or, you know, every wine from one company. I just picked the eight that I liked and then made a story around it. But the thing about it is that I know that it's very easy to get these sort of experiences around London. There are a lot of people saying, we'd like to come out to a wine tasting, and they're like, oh, I went to two last week. Oh. And it's kind of, it's over-serviced a little bit, and people are very arrogant about it down in London. And when I do talks, I used to run the road shows for Tesco's at the Men's Centre. We used to go to Birmingham, used to go to Newcastle, used to go to Edinburgh. Whenever I get away from London, the genuine interest, the honest interest in what you're talking about explodes. People are so much more genuinely interested in what you've got to say. And I think that, you know, people can be very London-centric in the wine industry. So, when I get a chance to come to Manchester or Liverpool or Birmingham, I jump at the chance. I'm always meeting more interesting people. People are much more open. People don't sit there sort of thin-lipped going, you're right. And going, oh, yeah, everything's fine. And they're sitting there talking, they're back-chatting you. Here, they just tell you to your face if they don't like a wine. Or, you know, and it's a really entertaining evening every time.
Fantastic. So, at the moment then, obviously you're working on, is it Saturday?
Yeah, I'm on James Martin's Saturday Morning Kitchen.
Yes.
Rattles off the tongue, that one. And also I'm on This Morning with Holly and Phil and Eamon and Ruth.
Fantastic.
So Holly.
I know for a fact that some of our listeners are quite into James Martin. He's seen as a bit of a dish.
Yeah.
My mum keeps telling me he's a
dish. I was wondering what you're going to say then.
So what I want to know is, what's it like? Because obviously to our listeners, seeing people on the television and hearing them on the radio.
Yeah, sure.
But what's it like to actually work with these people?
It's a very good question. James Martin's been around for a long time, and he's been and the thing about James, what gives James cred is that James always had cred in the trade before he started working. A lot of these people on telly who are telly chefs kind of started as a telly chef. A lot of these people sort of got famous and then had to go and work out how to run a kitchen. And there are people out there, some of who I'm bezzy mates with, great example would be Simon Rimmer.
Right.
Well, I used to go to the Cop with and watch games. We've had that experience. And he's a great mate, and he's a great talent. But he bought a wine bar and a restaurant in Manchester when I was at university, just because he wanted to get some girls. He was single, and the chef was terrible, and he told him he was terrible, and the chef just walked out on him. So from nowhere, he was in the kitchen with no training, teaching himself how to cook, and he's a total autodidact. Everything he's ever learned in the kitchen, he worked out for himself. And that was before the internet and Google. You know,
so
he was
completely
there.
Completely self-taught.
Wow. And then he's still got a restaurant. I think it's still there. Dean's in Didsbury, which is a vegetarian restaurant. Best vegetarian restaurant I've ever eaten anywhere in the world. I mean, amazing. And I helped him open a restaurant which had back in the day called Earl, which was in Hale Village, where a lot of footballers' wives were.
Yes.
Any place in the world. The next door curry house basically sold chicken tikka masala and Krug champagne. Those are two things it sold. Very interesting combination, that. So I know he's doing very well with the pizza chain and stuff in Liverpool now. But a lot of people you see on TV aren't classically trained. Just like anything, if you're an academic and you're very, very good at something, chances are you're not very good at standing in front of people and telling people about it. There's a degree of autism about really clever people. I'm sure you'll agree.
Yes, completely.
And it's the same with great chefs. Look at Gary Rhodes, Atul Kutcher. Some of these people became famous, but they don't find it easy to talk to people, but they're clearly super geniuses when they get down to it with a knife and a board, you know. And James Martin did the hard yards. He did the grift. He was a pâtissier. He just made puddings to start with. And then he became assistant chef at a restaurant, a hotel called the Tewton Glen in the south, where my dad was head chef many years before that. And he was working in a kitchen on a Saturday doing 400 room service orders, 125 restaurant orders, maybe another 200 bar orders of a night with like a brigade of five or six people. And he did that for years. So the thing about him is he doesn't mack about. He knows the right shortcuts to take in the kitchen. He knows how to be efficient in the kitchen. So actually when you're watching him, I think one of the things that people get watching James Martin cook is he's not jazz hands about it. He goes, that's how it's done. Next. Yep. Parsnip soup, five ingredients. This is how it's done. Bosh, 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 blitz, next. There's no romance in it for him. It's a job. It's been a job all his life.
Yeah.
But he still cooks properly. And that's really, really good. And also, I'll tell you for nothing, if you buy his stuff, if you buy something that's got James Martin stamped on the side of it, it all works.
Oh, right.
Yeah. If he says Anthony Royal Thompson on it, it probably fell apart in the box.
So, obviously, you are very, very privileged in the fact that you've done extremely well for yourself and you've worked with some fantastic people, Phil and Holly. You don't get many bigger names than that.
No, so absolutely.
What I want to know then now is, how do you become a wine expert? Because my other half, his mentality is, I drink a lot of wines. I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. That doesn't make a wine expert.
No, it doesn't. But practice does help. I've got to tell you, practice makes perfect.
That's the response I'm not
joking. But the thing is, if practice make perfect, if that was the only thing, then my wife would be an expert.
Right.
And she will drink anything. Anything at all. There are a couple of wines. I put wines in front of her, brands which maybe it's not even worth my reputation to criticise wholly, yes. But we might have heard of them. They sponsor TV shows and stuff like that. Well, I've said, look, now, if you think you like all wine, try this. And I pour them a glass of white Zinfandel from such and such a brand. Yeah. And I've poured it in a glass and I said, how hard can it be? How difficult can it be? It's still wine, isn't it? And she picked it up and drank it and went...
Yeah.
You got any tonic water? It's like, oh, my wife has a threshold. I didn't know she had a threshold, but she has one. So expert. How do you become an expert? Well, there are ways to learn. I was lucky because I grew up in a restaurant. My mother looked after the wine list. My dad was an internationally renowned chef. So when I was coming home, we always ate and drank well. My brother always ate more than I did. And if you look at us, that's surprising because he's considerably less fat than I am. But I was the one that cared. I was the one that I would say, Dad, I didn't like that. He goes, what are you talking about? This is perfect. I cooked this for you. You should enjoy this. And I'd be fussy about food. And it's kids that are fussy that grow up to be the real gourmets.
Right.
Because from day one, they're questioning what they're eating. My brother just shoveled it in like it's Gold Rush just or something. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that was the thing, that from day one, I was always aware of smells and tastes. I think when I was crawling around the garden, you know, there was taking things out of my mouth, going, what are you doing? Smelling, eating snails. Whatever I can put in my mouth or smell. I don't know, in a coal shed. You know, and the thing is, I've always been like that. And because my parents let me taste wine and beer when I was younger, very, very European. My father was German. My mum's Swedish. Still lives in Sweden now today. When I was 14, they'd give me a glass of wine. And if it was a bit strong, they might water it down slightly. But they'd let me try whatever they were trying. So by the time I got to 21, I knew more about wine than most people who have been in the trade until they're 40. Because when you're that young, you just mop up the knowledge. So I had that. I was lucky that I was all around very high quality food and wine. My brother might be upstairs watching Wheel of Fortune or something with his mates having a pint or something. Yeah. And my idea of a fun Saturday evening, if I was bored, was to sit in the corner of the kitchen and watch my dad cook for 190 people. For me, that was the best telly there is. You know, yeah. I'm watching him going crazy and
you learn the time, so much, don't you?
Yeah, and I learned about timing in a kitchen. I learned about you know, the tweak, what Dad used to call the execution, how to make it look good on a plate, all those things. And for me, that was riveting. And what amazed me was when I was a lad, why there wasn't more cookery programs on telly. But of course, now it's the new rock and roll. Everyone's doing it.
Everybody's on it. Yeah.
But no, I wish I'd twigged earlier. I would have made more money.
Now, is it true? Because you wear a lot of people talk. There's obviously a massive price ranges when it comes to different wines 100%. That you can buy and everything. Is it right that the expensive wines are always better?
It's a very, very good question. Within a bell curve, generally speaking, the more money you pay, the better the wine gets. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's better for you, right? It's first of all, the analogy I use is you go to a restaurant and you sit down and someone says, well, what should I have to the sommelier, you know, to surprise me? I want a nice glass of dessert wine. And he'll go, I recommend this Roquefort cheese with this sit down. It's a beautiful combination, the saltiness of the... I'm going, yeah, but I hate Roquefort. Next, if it's going to be a combination that works, but you hate one of the ingredients, then it's not for you. It doesn't mean I don't consider myself a Luddite because I can't eat blue sheep's cheese. It's just one of those things I can't eat.
Yeah.
I could probably eat live turtles. I just can't eat blue Roquefort. But so sometimes those combinations work for a reason. But when wine gets more expensive, it definitely gets more interesting. If you get a really, really nice wine, I can get a really good, delicious, crisp, dry white in any supermarket in this country for $7.99. $7.99 will guarantee you a decent glass of white wine somewhere. Yep. But if you take all the $7.99 white wines from a supermarket and line them up, if you're an expert, they all taste pretty similar.
Right.
It doesn't
matter
where they're from or who they're made by. You know, it could be an Albarino, it could be a Falanghina, it could be a Grichetto, it could be a Sauvignon Blanc, it could be a Chenin Blanc. Put them in a lineup. If they're just at that threshold of being okay, which is, I think, is around the £6 or £7 mark, they don't have much character. They don't scream character. The more money you spend, the more individual and more interesting they get, the longer the flavour tastes in the mouth, the more the texture might taste different, the more it makes you think about certain foods because it has certain very clear flavours. So you do get what you pay for. But there is a point at which I think is about £30 for table wine, which is still a lot of dough, let's be honest. When you get to £30, there are a vast number of wines that cost more than £30. You know, if you're looking at fine Bordeaux, that's virtually all of them. Right. You can pay anything up to £1,000 for a Bordeaux, a bottle of Bordeaux.
Oh, right.
But a £30 Bordeaux and a £1,000 Bordeaux cost exactly the same amount of money to make. That's the one thing you've got to remember. The only reason why the other one's £1,000 is there are some people out there, in some cases, nitwits, right?
That will pay it.
Who will pay it. And they'll pay it because of rarity and because of prestige and because of class and because, you know, because they only made 2 barrels of this. And somebody said it was the best one ever made. So being Chinese and owning 55 skyscrapers, I'm going to buy it. And that's the problem, that now the population of people buying the very few fine wines there are in the world is getting so much bigger and so much wealthier that the price is becoming laughable. It's like P. Diddy bathing on a super yacht in a plunge pool full of Cristal champagne. He did that because he could, not because it was good for the body. You know, it's like kind of
you can just afford to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. So my tip is don't spend less than £7 unless you have to. And I'll tell you the very, very simple reason why. If you pay £5, you've got to pay £2.10 to £2.30 duty. You've got to pay for a label, you've got to pay for the shipping, you've got to pay for the cork, you've got to pay for everything else that's involved in that bottle. By the time you've done that and taken 20% VAT off, there's only 30 pence left. So a £5 bottle of wine costs 30p to make. If you buy a £6 bottle of wine, all the overheads are the same. So a £6 bottle of wine is £1.30. A £7 bottle of wine is £2.30. So a £7 wine is 8 times better than a £5 wine.
All right.
Because the raw ingredients inside are multiply more expensive.
Yeah.
230 against 30p. It's just logic. So don't buy wines at £5 because they saw you coming. The Chancellor Exchequer is the only winner in that lineup, right? Buy one at £7 and upwards and you're getting something decent. If you go just over a tenner, come on, you know, drink less, drink better. You know, if you want to get drunk, buy a bottle of vodka and drink on the side. I don't care. But the point is the wine has got, just a little bit more money pays dividends in a better way.
It's like you say, you get what you pay for, don't you? 100%. So my final question then to you, Joe, is that Christmas is on the horizon.
Yeah.
It's the festive time of year.
Happy days.
Everybody looks forward to a festive tip.
Everyone looks forward to Liverpool being still at the top.
This is very true.
Come on.
Fingers crossed that will continue.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I can feel it. It's going to happen.
My final question.
Don't jinx it.
What's the best wine to serve with your Christmas dinner?
Bosch. Okay, simple as this. Roast turkey, which is what everyone's going to have for that, right?
Yep,
I mean, we
definitely
can talk about other things, because in the circles I move about, and they're going, well, it depends what you have. You have roast goose, claret, obviously, right? Which is true, but that sounded really, you know, it sounds exactly like what it is. But if it's going to be turkey, if it's going to be a turkey crown from Iceland, right? Then you've got to go with what tastes nice with turkey. And honestly, not a lot of things taste nice with turkey. It's a funny thing. Turkey can taste nice, but it's got such an earthy flavour. It's such a dry textured meat. It cancels out most of the wines that go brilliantly with everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, number one, my recommendation is don't drink red wine, but drink white wine, because it goes better with white wine, just like roast chicken does. Roast chicken goes with oak chardonnay. Roast turkey goes with oak chardonnay. A posh oak chardonnay for £15, and you've made a day. but also Pinot Gris, which is a grape variety, which they grow in the northeast of France, which is also the same grape variety as Pinot Grigio. It's just a lot nicer. Pinot Gris goes really well with turkey. Don't ask me how I know that. I just know that. I think I was tasting it blind in a tasting for the Daily Telegraph, and we tasted like 150 wines ago at the Christmas dinner. We had pigs in blankets or the bread sauce. We had the works. And I went, blimey, what's that? And he said, that was the wine you hated the first time round. What is it? Alsace Pinot Gris. And it just tastes great with roast turkey. Now, if you want to drink a red, because, you know, it's Christmas,
yep,
I go for a posh Beaujolais. Now, that sounds odd. Most Beaujolais is cheap and a bit thin and not great. You know, the basic stuff. But once you get into decent Beaujolais, there are 10 areas in Beaujolais which have their own names. They're called Morgon, Fleury, Saint-Amour, Rennes, Rue. Go into a wine merchant and say, can I have a posh Beaujolais, please? Flipping delicious with roast turkey. It's kind of like a Burgundy, but not. It's light, so you can drink lots of it. It goes with the cranberry sauce, which is quite tangy. It goes with the sprouts, just slightly a bit herbal. If you go for something a bit too full on and something quite dry and tannic and oaky, turkey makes mincemeat of that. Pardon the analogy. It's a terrible analogy, you know what I mean? But it's just not nice. It's just not nice. So go for wines which are low in tannin, but lots of freshness. And I'd say go for a posh Beaujolais and you're in like Flynn.
Fantastic. Joe, thank you very much. My pleasure talking to you.
No, you too. Thank you.
So I'm here with Alex, and Alex, you're the Sales and Marketing Director for Addington Retirement Living here at the Bridges and some of the other sites. So there's a lot of misconceptions about retirement and people's plans and aspirations. What's the positives and the dreams about living somewhere as fantastic as the facilities we're in today?
I think the great thing about the Bridges and a lot of the developments that we have, it's very much about an independent way of life. So we welcome people into 1, 2 and 3 bedroom apartments. So they've got their own front door, their own letterbox, but we've also got this wider community. So at Addington, it's very much about creating an active community. So a place where perhaps you can come and make new friends. You've got great facilities here. You've got a hair salon, a table service restaurant. We've got a therapy suite. And I think it's quite interesting in the UK, unlike foreign markets like Australia, New Zealand, America, this chapter in your life, this part of retirement, in those countries, it's a way that people look forward to that chapter in their life. Whereas in the UK, there's a bit of a misconception about what retirement living is about. I think what we want to do is treat this as the next chapter in your life. So you may be somebody that loves to go away on cruises and you like to lock up and leave your house in a safe place, or you may be somebody that perhaps lost a partner a little bit early in life and you need to make new friends and perhaps have a safe and secure environment, but you're still very much an independent person.
Okay.
Who's got lots of friends and perhaps your family live in London, and but you're still very much from the area of Macclesfield where we are today.
So obviously with something like this, then I suppose when you get to a certain age in life, the house maybe becomes too big for you to manage, or the garden becomes a burden. This obviously gives you every single positive aspect of the next chapter of your life without the stress.
Absolutely. So we've got here, we're very, very lucky because we're on the banks of the Manchester Canal. So we've got lovely gardens here. We've got a big summer house. We've got barbecue facilities. And we've actually got one of our residents at the moment has been planting her vegetables.
Oh, wow.
For the autumn season. So one of the things for her, she had a very big house and a very big garden. She couldn't manage it on her own. But when we moved her into our development here at the Bridges, we actually got a garden shed for her. So she's got all her tools in the garden shed. We've got bedding plants and she's happily pottering around planting vegetables for the season. But she doesn't have to worry about the wider issues of mowing the lawn or, you know, weeding or chopping down trees. Obviously, we do that for you, so you've got a nice garden environment that you can enjoy, but you don't have the worry of the maintenance.
So this is a home from home, basically.
Completely, yeah,
very complete much. Home from home. So if you've been in a position where you've got a large home, or you've just unfortunately find yourself in a position where a loved one is no longer with us, and you're looking to downsize slightly and remove the stress, well, I'm kind of working out the numbers as to when I can move in.
Great. Well, we've got
which is my own personal perspective. Is 36 too young? I'm just getting that out there because I keep getting told I'm getting old. So
I think you're all right for a little while.
Got a little bit
we have got an age limit, and it isn't 36 at the moment, sadly. But I'll keep working on you.
Yeah. I'll keep working on you. So with regards to obviously when you live here, then what's the social aspect like?
it's very mixed, and it's down. There's something for everybody. So we have an activities room where you know, there's a sewing machine. There's lots of games. If you've got the grandchildren coming to visit you for the weekend, they've got lots of games upstairs that they can play. We have a knitting and natter group. So it's actually a local Macclesfield group who they meet every twice a month.
Oh, fantastic.
And we actually host them here because a lot of our ladies enjoy knitting.
Yes.
So we're actually hosting the knitting and natter group here. So they come in, the ladies that actually live with us enjoy that. And then we've got other activities. We had a canal trip a few weeks ago where it was quite nice for the residents to actually take the canal from Poynton, and then they sailed down the canal and waved as they went past the bridges.
Wow.
Which was quite fun. So there's lots of small activities on a day-to-day basis, or we'll get a local speaker in from the Probus group, but very much local communities activities. So it's as much about what the residents want to do here as getting involved in the local community, and then we'll invite people in for special events. And today we've had Joe Wostak from the BBC. Some of you will know him. He's a fantastic wine expert, but very accessible. So what we've done this afternoon is we've just had a wine tasting event hosted by Joe for our residents to try lots of wines in preparation for Christmas. And we've also invited a couple of people just to experience a day in the life of the Bridges, just to see if it's something for them.
Fantastic. And obviously I've been well looked after this evening with a glass of, is it Malbec?
It's a Malbec. It's an Argentinian Malbec.
And for somebody that doesn't drink wine, it's actually quite palatable. It's quite nice. I could see myself enjoying that with my Sunday lunch.
Great.
Or
glad
maybe
you approve.
In an evening when I'm having a bit of quiet time. Now, with regards to the location then, so we're in Macclesfield. I have to say, obviously, the listeners won't be able to see by listening to ourselves today, but the aesthetics of what you've got around here are absolutely beautiful. You've got the canal, you've got the gardens are landscaped, and am I right in saying that on the back of each of the downstairs ground floor properties, they've got like their own little terrace as well?
Yeah, so everybody has a patio that's on the ground floor, and then every other apartment has a balcony as well, so you can put your garden furniture out. We were lucky towards the end of the summer, the south side of the building was fantastic just to sit and look at the gardens on your own terrace and your own space and enjoy the sunshine. So we have been very lucky at the Bridges. We've also got a development in Cheadle called The Chimes. That's slightly different to here, but a similar environment. So lovely gardens, but you're 2 minutes walk from the high street. So again, people that like to be part of the local community, nip out shopping, as well as have the facilities that we've got in-house, like the restaurant and the hair salon.
Fantastic. So the rooms, I'm sat in the living dining room at the moment, and the, I suppose, the aesthetics and the decor are just phenomenal. And are these all designed for people to move straight into, I assume?
Yes. So what we have as a standard apartment is fully fitted carpets throughout, fitted fireplace and fitted kitchen with integrated appliances. So that's in every single apartment. We have got a number of show homes as well, so people can get a taster for what a home could look like. And if they need a little bit of help with furniture and design, we can obviously lend a hand as well, because sometimes our residents are downsizing from maybe, you know, a 3, 4 or 5 bedroomed house. We've got loads of storage facilities. I know sometimes that's a worry when people are moving from the family home. So again, we've got a super team who actually will help you with the move. They'll come and visit your house, they'll do a free consultation, they'll have a chat with you and see you know, what perhaps is your checklist to think about possibly moving. And as I say, we've got a team, very experienced team, who can just have a relaxed chat with you about anything and take your time thinking about it. We've got hot coffee on the go, and we've got our lovely residents who will obviously welcome people as well.
Fantastic. And am I right in saying that, is there a guest suite? So if there people is, want yep. their family yep. to, let's say, for example, we're obviously in Macclesfield and they've got family in, whether it be Manchester, London or elsewhere, they can come over and stay overnight. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. So we have a guest suite in all of our facilities. So we've got two twin beds and a sofa bed. So often our residents are kind of booking that if the family are coming up from London, bringing the grandchildren, they've got their own private suite that they can use. And then they're welcome to breakfast in the restaurant as well with everybody. And the restaurant's open every day for breakfast and for lunch. Again, freshly cooked dishes every day. Roger and Gwen are the chefs in hand, and there's plenty of choice for everybody as well. So whether it's friends, family, grandchildren, everybody's welcome.
So no matter what your plans are for retirement, there is always an option for the next chapter. And from the sounds of it, there's not much like this out there, is there?
There isn't at the moment in the UK, and we're very proud to be spearheading the sector. It's a growing sector. We've got a number of developments throughout the northwest. We're growing into Birmingham and into the southwest as well. But you know, it's an exciting time to be in this industry. We're all living longer. We're living healthier. We want to do more things in our retirement, and this is the place to be. So you've got the flexibility to do that.
Alex, thank you so much for welcoming me here to the Bridges this evening.